to another episode of For the Love of Cinema. My name is Grayson Maxwell, and joining me, as always...
Hi, everyone. It's me, Nicholas.
Nick, I understand you love America.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that.
Well, what is up, Nick? How is your week doing?
You know what? It was pretty good. You know, I spent some time, well, most of my time at work, obviously, slinging the hot pasta to old people. You know, got some great movies in this week, you know, saw a lot of good films. You know, hung out with some friends, you know, got a little debauchery in, no big deal.
Well, that's good, man.
Same,
you
same old. Yeah.
What kind of trouble did you get into?
Huh?
What kind of trouble did you get into?
You know, I went bowling, you know, went to a casino.
Oh, to the casino. Did you do any gambling?
Yeah. I gambled. The only game I play at a casino is blackjack. I try and find the best blackjack table, and I go up there. You know, I watch the dealer a little bit, count some cards, see where I can fit myself in there.
Wait, blackjack's the one where... Wait, you said blackjack, right?
Yeah.
That's the one where you... I mean, I'm not a big gambler or card player, but that's the one where you try to hit 21, right?
Yes, sir.
And so, yeah, when I go gambling, here's what happens when I go to the casino, and I go with some friends who are like, they spend way more money than they should, because I know some of them are like saving for a house, and then, I take 20 bucks with me, 20 bucks in $4 or $5 bills, and what I do is I take $5 and I'll play that game, probably the roulette. Is it called roulette, where you can bet on colors or numbers?
Yeah.
And I'll put $5 on black, and then I'll just see how far that can ride me. And then as soon as my $4 or $5 bills are gone, I'm done. I walk away. I'm done. I just get a beer and walk around and hang out.
Yep. Always bet on black, Grayson.
Why black? Is that statistically the better color?
You know, I've heard that. I've just always heard always bet on black. So that I, you know, it always sways my opinion, you know.
Interesting. I'll have to, when there's black, red, and green, I mean, black and red, it's 50-50. But, I mean, if black comes up more, if there's data to corroborate that, then for sure.
Very true.
But, all right, podcast listeners, we have a good show today. What, it's extra special for me because we have some Ridley Scott news, some more James Cameron news, which obviously relates to Terminator, as far as I'm concerned. A lot of Fast and the Furious news, very interesting stuff, and a friendship has been patched up. We'll get more into that. And we get some interesting trailers today, and I'm really excited to talk about this. So, the box office, without further ado, this week, I gotta say, I'm a little surprised, Nick. I gotta tell you why. Blade Runner is number one this week. First weekend, it has, boy, this is a movie that has a big, it's got a big shoes to fill as far as its predecessor.
Yeah.
The budget, $150 million. You want to take a guess how much it brought in worldwide?
Oof.
I'll give you a hint. It's not anywhere close to $150 million. Like, it's way under. It's not over. It's under.
Oh, man. You know, I'm going to go with a safe, around 70 million.
You know what? You're pretty close. 81. So.
Ah, okay. All right.
And I read that the opening night only did 4 million, which I think is a little disappointing. I think everyone was expecting a little more from that.
That's crazy. Just 4 million on opening night.
I figured it would be more, but the other one, it's been so long since the original that I can understand. I mean, there's a whole generational gap there to those. Like, it's not like one of the Pirates movies that came out, you know, just a few years after. Like, we're talking decades later.
Yeah, so, exactly. I mean...
We're talking enough time has passed that if you watched it and then had a kid, that kid's now, like, 25 years old. So, I mean, that's... And that movie does revolve around a child, so that's pretty cool. Yeah. So, I hope that movie does well. I gotta be honest, I liked it. I can't decide if I loved it or if it's grace and love for it. Well, like, I just thought it was... Yeah, I thought Blade Runner was a hit. So we'll definitely get into that and unpack that next week. Very excited. Number two this week, and I'm really excited for this, The Mountain Between Us. Number two this week, first week in the theater, $35 million budget, and has made only $13.7 million, which isn't great. Given the two stars, I thought that'd be a bigger pull, but opening with Blade Runner, I can see why it may not have done so well. Blade Runner is one of those movies that's it's years and years and years past when a sequel should have been made, so people are really excited about it. Anything that would have come out against Blade Runner, I'm sure, wouldn't have done what it was expected to do, because Blade Runner was expected to do so much business. Mountain Between Us. What? I'm so sorry, Nick. What was that?
The Mountain Between Us. You said it was only. It took $35 million to make.
That's it. That was the production budget. And the advertising budget, by rule of thumb, is half the production budget not advertised, not in the budget. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you're looking at a $35 million budget, you're probably looking at another $17 for advertising. So, I mean, you're probably looking at closer to $50, but $35 million production budget, so we'll just go with that for whatever they put in directly to it. So, 13.7, you know, that's not... Part of me wants to say it could have done a lot worse, but I'm hope it picks up steam after everyone watches Blade Runner and loves it and then moves on to something else. So maybe that will be the case for Idris Elba and Kate Winslet, The Mountain Between Us. And it, Nick, is still in the top three. It's still making gobs of money. This weekend, another many, many million. Number three this week, it was two last week, $35 million production budget. Nick, where do you think we're at with this one? You are like 0 for 5 with this movie.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. So, I want to say, what was it last week? Do we know?
It was just under 600. It was like 590 last, or 585 or 590 last week.
Okay.
590,
not 90. I'm going to go with 690 million.
Damn, dude, that's a huge leap. No, it's 603, so just over 600 million. But
yeah, I was overcompensating.
But this coming Friday is Friday the 13th, so I'm sure that will make so much money on Friday the 13th. With kids going, with age-appropriate kids going, you know, 17-year-olds taking dates, whatever. True. I'm sure that movie will make tons of money. That is a great, great movie, though, as we talked about. My Little Pony, Nick, you'll be happy to know, is in the top five. It's number four. Doesn't give a budget. Only made $12.6 million. Bronies of the world, where are you? Why are you not supporting your movie?
Bronies, rejoice.
And
it is here.
And spend money to see your movie, please. because it's not doing well otherwise. Emily Blunt, Kristen Chenoweth are two of the voices. Those are pretty big names, but it doesn't look like they were able to sell it much. So we'll see how that goes. Kingsman, The Golden Circle, what we talked about last week, I think a very necessary sequel, is number five this week. Number one last week, dropped four spots. $104 million budget worldwide at $254 million. Not bad. The budget's at $104 million, so you got to figure out. I mean, you got to figure, at $150 million, that's the whole production and advertising budget. So yeah, it's well past that. So good for Kingsman. And as we noted last week, there's already a third one in the making by director Matthew Vaughn. So.
Yeehaw.
Yeah, I mean, you can look forward to that. And I'm guessing 2 years from around the same date, more awesome gunfights, you know, more girls with weird legs and that cut people up, and more fights in the jungle and more poppies, and I'm sure it'll be great. Whatever he comes up with, I'm sure it's great. American Made, number six this week. Last week, number three, it dropped three spots. I think understandably, but $50 million budget, $98 million. So that's doing all right. I'm sure the studio is happy with that. Doug Liman, which we'll talk about today, I'm sure Doug Liman is happy with that too. Tom Cruise, Jesse Pymans, and then Doug Liman was the director. All right. The Lego Ninjago movie, number seven this week, number four last week. No budget given again, $77 million worldwide. Not terrible. What's interesting about that, it's got a domestic total of 43. So domestic is actually bigger than foreign. I would think the foreign market would be a little bigger.
Yeah, I mean, that it kind of surprises me a little bit too.
Because of the animation, so.
Yeah, a lot.
But that, as we discovered, that, you know, wasn't as good as his two predecessors, but not by any means, you know, unenjoyable, but certainly not as strong as the first two, or the first one. That was, I think, the best Lego movie we're ever going to get. So.
True.
Number 8, Victoria and Abdul, one that I did not see, but it doesn't give a budget. $30 million, though. Oh, well, $31 million. It's $30,958,000, so $31 million. Not terrible. That was Judi Dench and Eddie Izzard. So, I mean, that's one that's probably not as widely released, but that is going to be number 8 this week. Number 9, Flatliners. Number 10, Battle of the Sexes. Other notable spots, number 11, American Assassin. 14, Home Again. 16, Mother. And the 20, ooh, Leap. Still number 20. Good for Leap.
Oh, okay.
I know. Good for Leap. Wind River just got pushed out. Hitman's Bodyguard finally pushed out. Don't see anything else of note that far down, but that's the box office. Now, what came out this past week, if, in case you were living under a rock and did not see any of the 10 million signs posted everywhere, Blade Runner 2049, The Mountain Between Us, My Little Pony. What comes out this coming Friday, the 13th, The Foreigner, Happy Death Day, Marshall, Breathe. October 20th, Same Kind, Different as Me, The Jungle, The Snowman, Only the Brave, Leatherface, Wonderstruck, and Geostorm. That is a big week.
It's a huge week.
Yeah, I don't...
Huge.
Given, now, as someone who's worked in the movie theater business since I was like 16, those big weeks, I don't think they do anyone any favors by having that many movies in one week.
Yeah, because that's kind of tough, right?
Well, it certainly splits the sales. And in today's world, people, let's say, for example, there's two movies in that. Let's say that you really want to see Only the Brave and Leatherface, which, you know, as myself at one time, as a teenage guy, I would have wanted to see both of those movies. And then the next week is Jigsaw, Thank You for Your Service, and Suburbicon. All movies targeted at that same group. So
yeah.
It's tough if you're like, I only have time to see one this week, and you see one of those, and then you don't come back to the other one because you want to watch, you don't want to miss Thank You for Your Service or Jigsaw, and then the week after, you certainly don't want to miss Thor. So it's a tough call. Like, in my experience, weeks that have, like, usually anywhere between two movies is a good amount, because then you have... You're, in theory, splitting the market share two different ways. You're two different targeting two different audiences, so you don't overlap. I mean, in a perfect world, two movies come out. They're targeting, one might be targeting younger kids, others targeting adults. That way, they don't ever intersect and they make their money. But in stuff like this, I've noticed in ticket sales over the years, it really hurts. You know, it's really going to hurt them because they're not going to get the people that want to see them because people move on so quick.
Yeah, the demographic is gonna be hit or miss, definitely.
And people today they want instant gratification, and then they want to move on to something else, you know. So it's a tough market, but that's a big week. The 27th, the last weekend of October, Halloween weekend, Jigsaw, Thank You for Your Service, Suburbicon, All I See Is You, and then November 1st, which is not a Friday, it's a Wednesday, A Bad Mom's Christmas. And then November 3rd is a big week for Thor Ragnarok, Killing of a Sacred Deer. Now, I mean, the big movie that week, of course, is Thor. November 10th is a big week for me because Mel Gibson, I love him, Daddy's Home 2, and Murder on the Orient Express, which is going to be a great movie, I have no doubt. Josh Gad and Kenneth Branagh. So we'll see. And unfortunately, we have lost a mega superstar one of these past weeks, and I have to say... we didn't cover it last week. It got overlooked, and for that I apologize. But Tom Petty is no longer with us. Nick, how do you feel about that?
It definitely hurt this week. Yeah, when you know I heard about it in the morning. I went to work. Then I had some customer tell me that he wasn't dead. He was just in the hospital, and then I guess later he died in the hospital. And it just it it sucks because, you know, he was an inspiration to many people. I mean, you probably can't count how many people he inspired with his music. I know I was a huge fan over the years, you know.
Yeah, I went through a Tom Petty phase where I listened to a lot of music. And this past week at work, I do a lot of, like, as I'm in accounting, I do a lot of entering purchase orders and paying, matching them with invoices and paying out invoices. So, like, I have a lot of, I put music in a lot, and I listen to a lot of his albums. I listened to three of his albums, but while we're there, I did celebrate this week by watching The Postman, the 1997 box office bomb. What's his name? Kevin Costner. He made it and was in it, and it was a huge, huge financial disaster for that studio. But Tom Petty was in it as the mayor of Bridgeville, so I celebrated. Most people celebrated Tom Petty by listening to his albums. I celebrated Tom Petty by watching The Postman. But hey. It's a fun movie. It's one of the movies that I don't really understand why it got. Like, it's like Waterworld. Like, Kevin Costner has two of the movies that, like, why would you ever make this movie? But yeah. He has two of them, Postman and Waterworld. So there's that. But also, he has credits composing for soundtracks from 1985 to 2017. And also, some of his more popular, well, some of his albums, Wildflowers, Hard Promises, Southern Accents, Into the Great Wild Open. I don't have a lot of experience with Tom Petty. Like I said, I went through a phase when I was younger, but I had to look this up, and this came from Rolling Stone, the top 10 Tom Petty albums, from 10 to 1, from the least popular of the 10 to the most popular of the 10, Long After Dark, Mojo, Into the Great Wild Open, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Echo, Hard Promises, Southern Accents, Full Moon Fever, Damn the Torpedoes, and Wildflowers. So that's not a list for me personally. I was never really into huge Tom Petty. I went through phases, but I got that list offline. I feel like we need to remember the man. So those are his top 10 most popular albums.
Well, one thing about Tom Petty that I don't know if a lot of, I mean, if you're a huge fan of him, you might know, but the song You Don't Know How It Feels, there's a line where he basically says, you know, let's smoke another joint. But to have that on TV and, you know, to say that in his video, he couldn't. You know, they weren't allowing it. So what he did was, you know, he basically said joint backwards. So I believe it sounded like Tinoise or something on the video, or MTV, whoever played it, you know. It was just a little fun fact about him and Tom Petty. God,
that's a cool factoid, though. I mean, that's
it is. I forget where I heard that. I know it was on some VH1. Maybe it was like VH1 All About the Music or something like that.
That's a cool little factoid, though, like a piece of Americana. That, you know, that's a cool little factoid. So. For all you Tom Petty fans out there, I'm sure you knew it, but for those of you who didn't, that's a cool little fact. And so, as we say goodbye to Tom Petty, please listen to his music. If you have Spotify, obviously you can listen to everything for free. Or if you have his albums, give him a listen. Watch The Postman. But Tom Petty, you will be missed for sure. You were a huge musical icon and legend, so you will be missed. We have news. John Krasinski plays the new Jack Ryan. Some Jack Ryans in the past. Chris Pine, I think most recently, was Jack Ryan. Ben Affleck was Jack Ryan. Harrison Ford. So, which makes me... John Krasinski is a damn weird choice for Jack Ryan. Given how Jack Ryan is just another Ethan Hunt. He's just another James Bond or a Matt Damon. Not Matt Damon. What, Jason Bourne. It's just... John Krasinski is an odd choice, and I don't know why he got that role. I would love to know, but I think maybe 13 Hours, Soldiers of Benghazi was a contributor to that.
Yeah, I agree with you there, because I mean, I like John Krasinski. I'm a huge fan of him because of The Office, but compared to, you know, all the other guys that, you know, have been chosen in that role. It just, you know, he's kind of the outlier. Yeah.
He's one that doesn't fit. For sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I would have even thought that Chris Pine probably didn't fit, but now he's not. Now John Krasinski is the one that doesn't fit. But this is it's actually a TV show on Amazon, so it'll be exclusive to Prime members. So I never know if that's a wise choice to make something exclusive to like a certain number of people. So even though Amazon is a damn good deal anyway, so. I think it's $100 a year, but you get free 2-day shipping and access. Like it's a whole like Netflix rollout for Amazon. That's lately I've been thinking is arguably better than what Netflix offers. They offer more. Well, for me, that's better because they offer more mainstream movies that I loved and can watch again. And they have a really good like cheesy horror section, which let's face it, where everyone's in the mood for a cheesy horror movie every now and again. So that's pretty cool though, but. Congratulations to John Krasinski. I'm sure that show will be pretty cool. Shows have really escalated. I know we talked about this a few weeks ago, but the shows have really escalated. You know, like we have the Game of Thrones. We have the Jason Bateman show, Ozark. The Walking Dead. I mean, every episode is legit like a movie, or like a mini movie. So that's...
Well, there's certainly some aspects of TV that are, you know, going above and beyond to give you what you want to see. And then... You know, there are the other, you know, channels or shows on television that just you watch and you're like, how is this a thing?
I know Mindhunters premieres on Netflix very soon. That's one that I was on for like a day on Mindhunters. But then I left one project, went to Mindhunters, and then immediately left for another project. But and it was shot in Pittsburgh, and that's a pretty big deal for, and that's also one that like every episode is production value out the wazoo. So that's another example of a show that like is almost on film production values, as far as features go. But that's pretty cool though that they're making a show out of the Jack Ryan. The writer producer Graham Rowland, he's gonna be attached. He's a former Marine. So what I think is cool about that is. He'll bring something to the Jack Ryan character that may not have been there before because he's an ex-Marine and may see things different. Like he knows the, I mean that's why you have it. He's like a technical advisor, but he's a writer. So
yeah, no, I totally see where you're going with that. It's like a it's an unknown perspective for many people who are probably working on the show who you know weren't in the military or whatnot. Or if they were, you know, it's just good to have someone that's, you know, more than hands-on, I guess.
Well, it's always cool. It's always cool to like have military advisors for a character like that to show him like so they're making sure that he's always holding a weapon right, or he's always holding a knife right, or he's walking right, or he's talking to someone correctly, just to make sure that's correct. But from a writer's point of view, that will add, yeah, you're right, a whole different depth that may not have been there before. So that's really cool. Joining Krasinski or Ali Suleiman, which was he was in Lone Survivor and The Kingdom. Wendell Pierce he's in The Wire, Ray, and Parker. And Mina Massoud, who is the choice for the live-action Aladdin. So you can look for all of them with John Krasinski. And I love this date. July 26, 2019 it's going to be a big day for me because it's the Hobbs and Shaw spinoff, The Rock and Jason Statham, who now I guess are friends, even though they really did not like each other on the set of the past Fast and Furious movies. They actually
didn't like there was some
they hated each other like the actual men hate each other not the characters but the actual actors. But the picture they show with this news article is they're like hugging and laughing and smiling. I don't know if that's I'm hoping it's not just a promotional thing or like it's actually like okay. They've realized we're two badasses in Hollywood. Let's be friends, you know.
Yeah, maybe that's what happened. You know, they were just too afraid to talk to each other because they were gonna try and outman each other. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, The Rock. Let's get one thing straight here. The Rock is very hard to outman.
Yeah.
But I mean, so was Jason Statham at a time. You know, he's really cool. He's almost like a a Jet Li or a Jackie Chan, but like an American version of them. So that's really cool that there is a spinoff. And
he's English, Grayson, isn't he?
Statham?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but he's not. Well, he's English, but he's not Asian. That's my point. Like Jackie Chan and like, yeah, they were like they're Asian. Like you kind of expect martial artists in their background, but not Jaden Statham, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying.
And Chris Morgan will write. In the past, he's written the movie Cellular, which I actually love that movie. But if you recall, it's Chris Evans, and he gets a call from someone who's kidnapped by Kim Basinger, this woman that's kidnapped, and he cannot lose the call because then she has no one to call because the phone she was calling from got hit with the baseball bat, and that's the only number she was able to dial, and he's got to stay on the phone while trying to solve this, get policemen to believe him to help solve this crime. Really fast-paced movie. I loved it. 2004. Anyway, he wrote that. He wrote Wanted. The Fast and Furious, the 2009 Fast and Furious, so like the fourth one, Fast 5, Fast 6, Furious 7, and Fate of the Furious. And I love this, too. He's also giving writing credits for Legend of Conan, Gears of War. I did not know that was being adapted, but that's really cool. That's a huge a Microsoft Xbox franchise, Gears of War. It's really, the premise is cool. Humanity is at war with an unknown, what's known, but unknown how it got there, like locust invader that hope dwindles, and it's grimmer every day because the locusts are closing in on the last bastions of human survivors. That's really cool. So I hope they do that right. And Young Frankenstein. So he has quite a resume with writing, I'll tell you what.
That's one of those lists that you look at and you're just like, wow, okay. Yeah.
Like, wow, damn, yeah, nice.
So, yeah, so some good credits right there.
And if you remember, July 26, 2019 is also the day for the new Terminator movie. I'll be like, even in like February of 2019, I'll be like, so I will not be able to eat or sleep for either one of those movies. I'll be super excited. April 2020, the next Fast and Furious movie has a tentative date. Nothing has been confirmed yet. Justin Lin might come back to direct. He's directed a few of the other ones, but nothing is set in stone yet. But Tyrese Gibson did send out a tweet how he was not happy that the series has almost put Dwayne's character Hobbs, or The Rock's character Hobbs, into the spotlight. And Tyrese Gibson is not happy about that. So, again, it's always hard to tell if that's a publicity stunt or he actually is upset about that. But, I mean...
I could see him being a little upset about it, but...
Because Tyrese has been there since Too Fast, Too Furious in 2002...
Yeah.
When The Rock only joined 2009, or I don't know if he was in the fourth one or the fifth, or he started in the fifth one, I can't remember, or the sixth. That's my own personal, I cannot remember. My goodness, I'm getting old. So that's
yeah,
a huge
I'm gonna say it was the fifth one.
All right, fifth one. You might be right.
Don't quote me on that.
Fair enough. Chris Hemsworth is, there's pictures online, you can see them. He's on a horse and horse soldiers. And the article I was reading, I loved the first line of the article reads as this. I'm quoting the article. Have you ever wanted to see a photo of the sometime God of Thunder on horseback? Yes. Yes, I have. that's pretty cool. And what this little piece of news, what I love about Hemsworth is what he brings to a role. And I want to precede him with, the last two people I say that brought this to a role were Leonardo DiCaprio and Russell Crowe. They bring this absolute physical presence with this enormous gravitas that they have on screen that is almost undeniable. DiCaprio, obviously, people remember him from The Departed. Blood Diamond, a lot of people know him from A Body of Lies. He was in the Nolan movie Inception. He is a superstar, for sure. But Hemsworth, what he brings is raw, real, and he brings the physical prowess, which a lot of actors these days just don't. I mean, there's probably a handful, maybe as many as two handfuls that really could bring that. Maybe Idris Elba brings it. Liam notably brings it, I think. There are a number of guys, but he's one of them.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, you look at Chris Hemsworth, and I mean, he's... you know, he's not a small person. He's what, six? I want to say upwards of 6'4", somewhere around there.
He's huge. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, he lifts. Obviously, do you lift, bro? You know,
do you lift, bro.
No, and he's four, man. You know, he's the God of Thunder.
We know this by one of the movies I love, 2012, Snow White and the Huntsman. But it was only the reason I love that movie so much only is because of Chris Hemsworth. You know, the opening minutes of narration, he does so well, and he, like I said, he brings that physical badass to the movie that would have really sucked otherwise. Like it kind of held that movie above water a little bit for me, so that's why I like it. We all remember, I mean, obviously Thor, the Rush, the movie about Formula One racing, and Red Dawn. Like he was, and Red Dawn, without him, there wouldn't be a movie Red Dawn. So that's cool that he is. You know, I always like to see what he's going to be in. And more interesting Terminator news. I always like to look for this. Robert Patrick may be returning to Terminator. He was the villain. A lot of people say the best villain in the Terminator franchise. He was the Terminator in Terminator 2. The T-1000 liquid metal, he was badass. I mean, almost unstoppable, except for the way they stopped him, I guess. When asked, he very enthusiastically stated he would love to return to a James Cameron Terminator. So, the question is, with Arnold returning, with Linda Hamilton returning, in their respective roles, can he bring in Robert Patrick and make it work? I'd say he could, because James Cameron, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the kings of filmmaking. So,
yeah, I mean, he can definitely make it work.
I think so.
I think it would be tough. It'd be tough to not make it work. You know what I'm saying? I mean, James Cameron is essentially, this is his child, and not really, but
no, it is. It is. I mean, it is, and like. For me, every time I see a new one come out, I'm like, it breaks my heart when they suck, and I'm like, I have hope that one day James Cameron will return. I have hope, and finally that day has come, and everyone out there is going to be like, oh no, I always knew he would. But like, I for sure can say that. I've been saying it since 2003 when Rise of the Machines came out, and it wasn't. What Rise of the Machines wasn't was Terminator 2, and Terminator 2 was fantastic as an action movie. It's almost unbeatable. I mean, there's some other ones up there, The Rock maybe, Terminator 2, there's several other ones, but I've been saying it, and I'm super happy that that's happening. So, and also Ridley Scott, also in the news, he talks about the Alien franchise, and he admits that, not that he had much to do, if anything, with the ones post-Aliens, but he said that of the four original films, which is Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, and Alien Resurrection, two of them were terrible. And it doesn't take a genius to figure out which two he's talking about. So, Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection. And it's interesting with his Blade Runner movie, especially with the new Blade Runner, the reference of trying to figure out, you know who's real, especially with the new Prometheus movie and the Alien Covenant, like with the droids and who's human, who's becoming more human, and you know who's got what agenda. That's really cool. That's all jiving together. So,
yeah, that's That's one aspect of those films that were just crazy.
I agree.
And you're wondering, it's the whole, back to Alien real quick. You know, can the machine be creative, you know? Can it create?
Well, that's the thing. The whole thing with Fassbender's character is trying to create life. You know, it's like, that's always, it's a huge ball of wax we're not going to talk about. But he did go on to say that he thinks that the exploration of the xenomorph he's not as interested in exploring the xenomorph as he is as exploring the route. He's been exploring the space jockey, I forget what they're called. I would have known the architects. He's more interested in exploring things other than the xenomorph. We really know a lot about them, except for where they come from, except for, you know, maybe the absolute origins. We know a lot about them, he said, and he will focus his efforts elsewhere. But the next movie, right now titled Alien Awakening, may take place in between Prometheus and Alien Covenant, which I think is a mistake, personally, but or hopefully following Alien Covenant so we can get more of the story filled in before the events of Alien. I don't know, I went off on a tangent, but I'm really excited about that.
I think we deserve a following of Alien Covenant.
we deserve more story closing the gap between Alien Covenant and Alien. So that's always the fun part. So Nick, The Foreigner, it comes out next week. I'm super excited. I want to take a look at that trailer again. What do you think of the new trailer for The Foreigner?
It was fantastic. You got Jackie Chan jumping all over the place. I think when he shows up with the landlady, I guess, or the maybe the lady who owns the apartments or whatever they're going to, and he's like, maintenance is here. You know, he pulls up and they're like, open the bag. He just, you know, he opens the bag, boom, there's a big ass gun right there, and he starts beating ass.
No, that's what he does, man. That's what we expect from him, is, or standing behind the counter playing with Lego Ninjagos. One of the two. The thing about this The Foreigner trailer is, if you look at the poster, the fifth theatrical poster, the phrase, never push a good man too far, is the phrase they chose to go with for that catch line, that catchphrase, which is cool. In the trailer, his daughter is a victim of a bombing, and all he wants to do is find those responsible. It's very simple. That's one of the reasons why I love Taken so much. It's one of the reasons why I love most Westerns, because the plot is simple. It's just, he's going to find whoever was responsible for that, and he's going to kill them. And it's just that simple. Nothing's going to get in his way. And if you get in his way and you're responsible, you're just dead. And that's what I like about the narrative drive of movies like The Foreigner. That's what makes it so interesting to me. And so that's why I get so excited for those movies, is you know what you're going to get as soon as you go into it. But I'm okay with that. He's a pissed off father who's going to kill. And that's what I want to see from him, is... that's why I paid him for my ticket to see, is that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a simple story, but it's powerful all in the same.
I hope it's got some emotion to it, because it's... I do love emotion, that kind of a revenge story. It's always fun.
Yeah. Very true.
The Current War, with Benedict Cumberbatch, Catherine Waterston, Nicholas Holt, Michael Shannon.
First off, great name. For a movie.
The Current War?
Yeah.
I actually thought quite the opposite. I don't like that name. I definitely would not have gone with that name.
It deals with electric current, Grayson.
Yeah, Nick, I get the play on words, man. I get it. I just think because the trailer definitely gives off some, if I didn't know it, if I just saw the trailer and someone was like, who made that? I would have guessed the Coen brothers made it. It's got that weird, quirky Coen brothers vibe to it almost. The Burn After Reading, the No Country for Old Men. It's got that weird vibe that they love. You know, I would have guessed they did it, but they did. It's not not them. But also joining them is Michael McFadden and Tuppence Middleton. It's about first coming up with the current. And that's all my knowledge of that early history is in The Prestige, the movie The Prestige with Edison and his main and his and their smear campaign against the Tesla campaign. That's all my knowledge comes from with that. So that looks really cool. It looks really good, actually.
Yeah, it doesn't look too bad. I've always Michael Shannon's always been one of those actors who. I never thought was good, but he always surprises me with some of the films that he's done.
A long time ago, I was working on this very small independent movie in Pittsburgh, and one of the guys who was there to help oversee it, I got to sit down with him one night and have a beer, and he was for many years before Michael Shannon got famous, was his roommate.
Oh wow!
So he was telling me stories about Michael Shannon and all the trouble they get into and how Michael Shannon was told repeatedly that he would never make it as an actor. And look at him now; he's huge. Like he's in so many movies. I thought, boy, if I could, if I could call him and maybe have him tell some stories, I definitely will do that for the show. But that was always that man. That was a great night of beer. Listening to him talk about Michael Shannon and just the humble beginnings of Michael Shannon. That's really cool.
That's awesome.
And Roman J. Israel. I've seen this trailer once or twice. I want to bring it up. Denzel Washington, my boy Colin Farrell. God, Colin Farrell, that once on top of the world, is just nowhere now. Niles Finch and Shelley Hennig. Denzel Washington is a lawyer fighting for the rights of his defendant. And there's a lot of other things going on. And I love Denzel Washington because he plays characters so well.
Mm-hmm.
He's very intense. He's, like I said, well, he add him to the list of can be very physical when needs to be. Is he's just one of those guys that I had the absolute pleasure of working on Fences, and I had to go to set twice because it was shot in Pittsburgh. Fences was shot in Pittsburgh, and I walked to set a number of times. And I was one day I was on set to watch a scene with him arguing with his. It was him and his wife arguing on the characters are arguing on set, and it was awesome to watch them back and forth.
I bet that was tremendous.
Yeah, it was something else, man. It was I was like on a different world. I wasn't on Earth for like 15 minutes watching that play out. Like watching them just turn it on and turn it off. Like when the camera was rolling, they were in it, and then when the camera wasn't rolling, they were laughing and joking. And oh boy, that was awesome.
Denzel, man, He's one of those actors that you look at his life and you look at what he's done. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, he's a hell of an actor. One of the best. So
Definitely one of the best.
Moving into, Flatliners. I got to say, boy, I went back and forth on this one in my head. Flatliners is one of the movies we're going to discuss today, and it is about a bunch of medical students one medical student figures out a way that medically, scientifically, she can stop her heart and be brought back. And she wants to figure out what she can experience in this time and be on the forefront of that kind of research. That's kind of a cool premise.
Yeah.
One of the initial problems that I walked away with was, and it's, this movie didn't know whether it wanted to be, what it wanted to be. Did you kind of get that?
Yeah, I didn't know if I was, it looked like it was trying to be a horror film, but at the same time, this weird.
It's a weird kind of thriller that, I mean, thriller isn't that far removed from horror, but there are two almost different genres if you're looking at them as different genres. And like at times it was trying to be like terrifying, like at times it was trying to be Annabelle creation terrifying, yeah. And then at times it was trying to be like Seven thriller, that kind of like trying to throw you off your game and that kind of thriller. It didn't know what it wanted to do. But we follow one med student in particular, played by Ellen Page, Courtney, who recruits through... I thought it was cool how she recruited the first guy to help her, James Norton, who played Jamie. She kind of like walks up to his table at lunch, and he's like, hey, you want to have fun with me later? And of course, he's thinking, yes, I want to get naked with you as soon as possible. Let's do this.
Classic.
So, yeah, classic. Guys are stupid. And he meets her and then figures out it's not on the level as he thought. And so these five medical students who, played by Diego Luna, Ray, Nina Dobrev, plays Marlo, James Norton, Jamie, Kiersey Clemons, Sophia, with their teacher, who never actually gets, Kiefer never like gets involved with the test, but Kiefer Sutherland, which is cool because he was in the original.
Mm-hmm.
So I always love when they bring people back. That's always a really cool piece of film history.
He was at least going to catch him in the act at one point.
We don't want to reveal too much here, Nicholas.
Yeah, so. Sorry.
No worries. It's not too big of a spoiler, but I don't think it's a spoiler to begin with. But when they do this, the first couple times they are able to one of them is able to medically stop their heart, and then they're able to experience this kind of out-of-body experience, and then they're brought back moments later, turns into a horror movie where these they're being stalked by their mistakes in the past, and they have to correct them. Their goal, they're trying to figure out a way to stop this from happening, to stop this from finally getting them in the end. One of them succumbs to her past and is unable to fight it off and becomes victim to it, and the rest of them don't want to end up like her, so they're trying to figure out how to avoid it.
Yeah, no, that's a very interesting premise.
I think so. I would love to. If someone told me they could stop my heart for 2 minutes and I would experience this entire ethereal out-of-body experience, I would definitely sign up. I wouldn't even ask any questions. I would love it.
Plus, I mean, you get, like, super smart after you do it. And, hey, if you have to say sorry to a few people from your past, why not?
It's always a good thing to make amends. The original was a Joel Schumacher movie in 1990, and it was, from what I understand, it was received well. It did decent box office. It was received well. I'm not sure what prompted the remake. Again, I'd love to be a fly on the wall in these conversations. Like, oh no, let's someone approaches the studio with a remake idea. No, not gonna happen. Or yes, please, let's do this.
Yeah, I think I caught probably 5 minutes of the original Flatliners when I was skimming through, you know, the guide on the TV about 2 weeks ago, and I turned it on. I saw Kiefer, you know, it was right before he was about to jump in.
Young Kiefer, too. That's the best part. Yeah. Young Kiefer.
Yeah, exactly. But I turned it a little bit after that, and I don't know. You feel like it doesn't need to be remade, but like you said, fly on the wall.
There's obviously a reason that someone saw it, but maybe it was Ellen Page signing on, or even because I can't imagine without her. She's the biggest name, arguably,
yeah.
Besides Kiefer Sutherland, but she's obviously, I think, once they got her, they knew they were going to get this movie made. So that's kind of what I think happened there, is they were able to sign her, and she is very good.
Mm-hmm. So that's, which Ellen Page, I've always been a fan of her because of, she was in Juno, but mostly for me it was her voiceovers for The Last of Us. And
that wasn't Ellen Page, though.
It wasn't?
That was Ashley Johnson.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. That was the chick. I'm almost positive that was a chick in the Captain America movie who he ends up saving. In the Avengers movie who he ends up saving in that building in the end. And she's the featured one there. Yeah, that's always a misconception, I think. I had to look that up myself a long time ago when I played Last of Us because the character model is exactly like Ellen Page.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, yeah, you're right. Okay.
But well, I think Ellen Page, I think she was in the, it was a PlayStation 3 game, Beyond Two Souls.
Yeah, that was the other, which, that's what I was thinking of while I was watching this movie, because it's not really the same thing, obviously, but in the video game, she's like the spirit is kind of attached to her a little bit, and she can transcend the energy. Something I'm not too keen on the game, but
so maybe maybe that was the reason she wanted to experience it. She wanted to be a part of it. I heard Willem Dafoe did that game for PlayStation. It was kind of groundbreaking at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that's always cool. Even in any entertainment medium, to have that kind of stuff going on is always interesting. I mean, you got to push the boundaries. I mean, James Cameron would agree with me. You have to push the boundaries.
Yeah, yeah.
He's always pushing the boundaries. Every movie he does. The thing I love about this movie is, at the same time, I love and hate about this movie is, they very quickly become aware that what's going on is terrible. I mean, it seems like a silly thing to say, but they very quickly become aware that they are being hunted by mistakes in their past. And one, I think Jamie's, his, of all the mistakes, I mean, he got a girl pregnant in the end and then left her, and that's kind of what his penance is. He has to figure out how to come to terms with that. And that's what I think is kind of interesting, because it's relatable to so many people. Is, you know, even if the movie's trying to say something else, even if the movie's has a deeper meaning of, before you can move on with your life, you have to mend the bridges from the past.
Very true. And there were, I mean, I'm not gonna get into all of them, but all these mistakes that these people had. They did in the years before medical school. They were some pretty big, there's some pretty big stuff. And
yeah, huge. I mean, that's the kind of things that follows you forever.
Exactly.
And I love how the movie opens. It opens with Ellen Page's character Courtney driving. She has a very young girl in her passenger seat, and answers a cell phone call, which wouldn't have been the 90s version. I've not seen it. I said I was going to, I just didn't have the time for that. For those of you who are looking forward to that, I apologize. But she answers a cell phone, which wouldn't have been the case in the 90s. It would have been something, mm-hmm. But if that even is how the movie opens, is Courtney making a mistake? That, of course, is what's haunting her, is she's unable to come to terms with that. And that's what one of the things that she is struggling with, her character in the movie, and that's what makes it interesting, because she's the biggest name in the movie, playing the most important character. And
mm-hmm.
What I dislike about her character is what she becomes in the end to help others. I dislike that, is what she becomes, like where she starts and what she ends up as is kind of, I don't know, it helped the story along as much as the director wanted it to. I will say that.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you there. There were a couple parts in this movie that were, I mean, there were some funny parts. There's some deeply disturbing parts in this movie also, but, I mean, it all kind of worked out.
That's being kind. Deeply disturbing is being exactly. Kind. There are some very deeply disturbing images in this movie.
Oh, man, I know there was it was a lot of times with the Jamie character that I was like, wow, I felt like he was getting sometimes the worst, except for Ellen Page maybe, but his haunting seemed horrible.
Yeah, it's and I love how they all played their part, like he was the kind of the sexy rich, med student, and Diego's character was kind of the one that, like, the older, making, kind of trying to make his life better. They all played their respective roles as far as their personalities brought to, but I mean, you don't have two characters that are the same, so they're all going to be different regardless, but that's one of the ones I liked about it, is they were so different, all of them, but that's what made them, the dialogue interesting to bounce off of, because they're all dealing with such different mistakes. I keep saying the word mistake. I'm not sure if it's a mistake rather than something that happened was out of their control that they now have to take responsibility for and find the penance. You know, that's what I like a lot about it, is character. Well, especially me, is characters that have to find redemption. I'm a big fan of redemption, regardless.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, people that make mistakes that have to pay for them and now find a way. I mean, that's kind of a heroic thing for me. Mm-hmm. Redemption. So as far as, is this ever going to be in your DVD collection and Blu-ray collection, or are you just going to pass it off?
As much as I want to say yeah, because I did enjoy the movie, I can't, I could say a couple bad things about it, but I really did enjoy it. It's probably one of those movies that I'll probably see it again in 10 years. It's one of those. I saw it.
Well, this is gonna be right now. It's October. This is gonna be on Netflix in January. I can almost guarantee it.
Oh, that and the one from the 1990s.
I'm actually surprised that wasn't more readily available. I searched it on Amazon and it didn't say Prime on it, so you had to pay money to watch it. I'm surprised that one wasn't available anywhere for free streaming. Because that would have gotten a lot of views. This movie didn't do well in the box office, so I mean, I was very egotistical in high school because like I spent the last 3 years of my high school career like watching every movie I possibly get my hands on. I had a buddy at Blockbuster that if he would give me movies as long as they were back the next morning. I never had to pay for them because he was my buddy. Like I hundreds, you know, maybe thousands of movies in the 3 years, and I worked in a movie theater, so I never paid for any movies. I watched everything that came out, and like I mean, and I used to be so egotistical, and like that movie sucks. Like it just like there's no other follow up to me. The other movie sucks or it's great or it wasn't until I got more once I watched more movies that I finally was able to refine a little bit my taste. I'm by means no you know movie genius, but one of the things I try to avoid is just saying statements like "nope, terrible, move on." But to be honest, I cannot find a reason to rewatch this movie. I just can't.
Yeah.
I always ask myself, you know, this. I don't think this is ever gonna even in the dollar bin at Walmart. I mean, dollar as in like you know anywhere from 1 to 5. It's a movie that I don't really think has a reason to exist.
Yeah, exactly.
I could be very wrong about that
because there's so many more movies out there that are worse than this. But you're right. I don't find a great reason to want myself to go watch it again. And like I said, even in 10 years, who knows? I'll probably just skip it.
Well, I mean, it's not like it only did 18 million worldwide in the box office if we looked at earlier. So it's not like. It was $19 million. It wasn't a horribly expensive movie. I'm sure a lot of that budget went to the hospital. I'm sure they shot some of the scenes at a real hospital, and then the rest of it was sets. They had to be sets, but I'm sure they did use a real functioning hospital for some of those. At least the boardroom, maybe they did for a real hospital. I don't know, maybe not. But I mean, it was a cheap movie. Hasn't made its money back. But I mean, the positives here is you do have Ellen Page. You do have Kiefer Sutherland. So that's cool. There are other things to watch.
Exactly. I will say that. You have Kiefer, you have Ellen, but all the other actors, I thought they did a decent job. You know, I've never heard of any of them, but.
Well, Marlo, I think Marlo, she was in Entourage, wasn't she in the Entourage? Maybe I'm wrong about that. I thought I recognized her. I should have looked her up, and I didn't, unfortunately. Nina Dobrev, she was in, I think she was in Entourage on and off again. I don't know, but other ones I had never, and well, Diego Luna I've heard of. He was in a number of things. I know he was in The Terminal with Tom Hanks, but yeah, they've been in things. I just don't recognize them as of recently.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. I can't see that on her credits, but she was in XXX Return of Xander Cage, the Triple X movie, which I loved, and it was a bad movie though. But Perks of Being a Wallflower, so she's been in a few things. I mean, she has a long list. So Degrassi, which is an MTV thing, but no, she's been on the list. I was wrong about that's not her. And, I don't think it's her, but I don't see it on her credits. But so at least the one in Entourage. So I'm just scanning it really quickly. I don't see that. No, so anyway, so that's I think this you're safe in skipping Flatliners unless you really want to watch them. By all means, watch it. American Made, Tom Hanks, not Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise.
Kind of oh man,
that'd have been a very different movie with Tom Hanks. Let me tell you. So, Tom Cruise, American Made. My two cents, real quick, is if I had to like. I thought it was actually pretty good, and there are lots of reasons for that thought. But what did you think?
Well, before the movie, I wrote a little note. Before I kicked some notes on the movie, and here it is. I have hope that this movie will kill. Tom Cruise is gonna fly planes again while running drugs while working for the CIA. He truly is Top Gun.
Good for you, Nick. Good for you. Top Gun reference.
And you know what? I mean, it's based off of, you know, Bobby Seale. He was a TWA pilot. Turned to the dark side a little bit. He was making that money, making that cash flow. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the American dream right there.
Well, I mean, there is something wrong with it. Even if you're doing it, even if you're doing it for the CIA, I mean, there are moral implications there that are, I mean, which he does struggle with. Not as strongly as I'd hoped he, Barry Seale, would have, Tom Cruise's Barry Seale would have struggled with, given what he was doing in his family. But they were there, at least notable enough to, you know, they were there. Now, Doug Liman, that's what I wanted to bring up, though, is Doug Liman is a very good director as far as American, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, being a filmmaker. So that's what I love about this movie is this is a big budget movie as far as, I mean, this is the kind of Hollywood I personally love. I love the big budget stuff. I love the big, you know, like the Nick Cage and the Tom Cruises and the Tom Hankses and the Russell Crowes and the DiCaprios. I love the big budget movies with huge stars.
Mm-hmm. And you can tell it was a big budget movie because it felt like a big budget movie.
It really did. And we're getting fewer and fewer of them, unfortunately, for me. A lot of people think that's a good thing. It gives a lot of young filmmakers a chance to, especially with technology becoming more available at cheaper prices, as far as like quality of, you know, lighting and camera and like that becoming more available to the more people, that's always a good thing. I would prefer every single movie be on the $100 million level in complete control of studios that, you know, I would, that's my perfect movie world, but I'm not saying that works for everyone. I get that. Those of you who are listening to this and are fuming with anger because I support that, I'm sorry, but that's just how that's my personal. Now, with that, I mean, I do work on my own scripts. I have some buddies in LA who are very close to selling something. My name is attached to one of them. He's shopping it around right now to Michael Bay. So with that being said, I do, in a very small way, support the independent filmmaker, but I wish all movies were Tom Cruise, Doug Liman, huge budget productions. So, I mean, like I said, those of you who are very angry with me, that's my personal opinion. Everyone's got their opinion, so that's mine. What about you, Nick? Do you prefer to watch nothing but big budget, or?
You know, it just depends. I've seen some low budget independent films that really just that grab you and don't let you go till the end because they're just so interesting. But I mean, there's the big budget movies. They do it by throwing it all at you at once.
What I love is. One of the examples that I always use, and to my great surprise, was an example in a textbook. It was a cinematography class that I. But this came up. Road to Perdition with Tom Hanks. In the end, there's a scene where the movie has a very big theme of fathers and sons, and the, you know, the sins of the father will be passed down to the son. And one of the scenes I really love is a perfect example of big budget versus not big budget. With there's a scene where Tom Hanks, like he, Paul Newman plays a mob guy, and he is a father figure to Tom Hanks's character, Michael Sullivan. And there comes a point in the story where Michael Sullivan knows in order for himself to get revenge and kill the guy who killed his son, he's got to remove Paul Newman's character from the equation. And the scene is beautiful. You know, Sam Mendes he crafted it meticulously, Tom Hanks is shooting from the shadows. None of Paul Newman's bodyguards can seem to hit him. And there's wonderful music. You don't hear any sound effect, but you hear this wonderful instrumental music. And as you see Tom Hanks walk through the rain in the dark, that's a shot on, I think it was a Warner Brothers lot. I could be mistaken about that, but it's you know, with the lighting, and then he stands in front of Paul Newman's character, and all Paul Newman says, all his character, Mike, all Mr. Rooney says is, "I'm glad it's you." You mean like, if you're gonna kill me, if someone's gonna kill me, I'm glad it's you. So, and then the music cues up, the camera tracks in, and it's raining, and then you see the hurt on Tom Cruise, sorry, Tom Hanks's face. It's a one of that to me is like lavish, huge budget production filmmaking, and I'm not saying you can't achieve that on a smaller scale. I'm saying it's harder, I guess, to achieve it on a smaller scale.
It definitely is.
'Cause on the low budget, you don't get the Sam Mendes and the you don't get the Thomas Newman scoring the movie. You know, I mean, you don't get those wonderful players that tend to only stick to bigger stuff, but that's a huge tangent. I apologize for that. But that's one of my examples of great, you know, huge budget filmmaking.
I don't want to get off the topic of American Made, but real quick, what do you who do you think? I mean, obviously, it depends on who's directing, but if you, in your thoughts, do big budget movies, or does independent film care more about detail?
Well, I don't think either. I mean, it depends on what you mean by attention to detail. I don't think anyone misses it intentionally, if that's what you're. I mean, I just think there are more people on set worried about detail on a bigger budget movie because you can afford to pay them. But on a super tight budget or a super low budget indie, some of that stuff might be overlooked because there's simply just not enough people on set to catch it, or there are people like on set on a huge budget movie to catch all that stuff. If you don't have a script supervisor, some of that stuff might slip through the cracks. But that's, I mean, I don't think anyone is more guilty of that than the other. I just think it's a matter of your budget level and who is looking out for that kind of thing. So, but I mean, in complete contrast to what I've been saying, two of in America, Jim Sheridan 2004, and Mir Nair made it. Oh, The Namesake with Cal Penn. Those are two small budget movies that are some of the best movies I've ever seen. As far as, I mean, so I mean, I'm on both ends of the scale, but I kind of want to get back to American Made. Sorry, that's a tangent for another day. But American Made. Doug Liman, Tom Cruise, Dom Hall Gleason, Sarah Wright, who is super hot, by the way. She's Barry Seal's wife, Sarah Wright. This is a pretty big cast movie. Tom Cruise is Barry Seal. Dom Hall Gleason is his CIA, CIA informant, Monty Schaefer, Sarah Wright, Lucy Seal, Barry's wife, and Jesse Plemons is actually I liked him in this as Sheriff Downing. Not that he has much to do with the plot, but what he does do, I actually loved him, so I'm okay with it. So, if someone told you you could make all that money, would you, Nick, by running guns to South America? If, of course, you could fly a plane.
Well, yes, Grayson, I can fly a plane.
Wow, look at you,
And
Nick. Dang.
yes, I'm sorry, I lied. I can't fly a plane. But yes, if I could, I would. Because, you know, I'm trying to have as much money as anyone else. So much that I can't bury it in my yard because my dog is coming up and digging through the dirt.
I
Now
would
there's.
be, oh my goodness, funny you bring that up. There's a scene where it's in the trailer where his wife Lucy is said that the dog just or someone just dug up a bag of money, and he's reading a book about Capone, another you know, kind of a mobster type that got his money from the drugs or from, you know, prohibition, another drug of choice. But he says, "Oh, it's all right. I'll clean up in the morning." Like, he's not at all worried about a bag of money missing. I would be furious. Holy crap! I'd want to
Crazy.
kill somebody if someone stole my money. So I love how this movie opens. It opens with it almost looks like a almost look like a video of like you're shooting on a handheld with it recorded onto a VCR tape, or VHS tape. And I love that look. It really puts you in the 80s quite well.
True.
19 starts in 1978, where Barry's flying a plane and his co-pilot says, "Wake me up over Texas." Like he's been so complacent, just doesn't care. And so he's flying the plane, everyone's asleep, it's a night flight, and I love how he messes with people by he hits the brake, wakes everyone up, and then like really puts his foot on the brake, and like everyone thinks they're crashing. He's like, "Sorry, folks, that was turbulence, not turbulence."
Dude,
It was just him being a.
a great way to start the movie
Well,
off.
it shows you what kind of character he is right off the bat. That's why I love that.
Yeah,
Is
exactly.
like, I mean, it's you're not going. This movie isn't like it's not like a super serious movie. That's what I love about it. It's like it's aware that it's kind of silly at times, but
Yeah.
Barry's in a very real struggle as far as like providing for his family. I mean, also running drugs for Pablo Escobar and keeping the CIA happy. Like he's got a full day, man. He's just.
Exactly. And you learn in the movie that he's got this schedule that's just, it's getting crazier as everything goes on.
I love how he like has the stack of quarters by the payphone with his pager.
Yeah.
So like he just has like this bank of like seven payphones in town that he just like goes to and like answers phone calls. He's like, "Hold on." And then he walks over to another phone, takes a call. He's like, "Hold on." Walks back to the other guy. It's so funny. He's like, "Will Friday work?" He says, "Hold on." And then he goes and asks the other person if he can do it on Friday. He says yes, and goes back to his CIA guy and says, "Yeah, Friday works."
Yeah, Friday works. There was you brought up Pablo Escobar. I love how usually movies that deal with the cartel will probably most likely just go straight to Pablo Escobar. You know what I'm saying? And in American made, it's more than that. You know, you don't just it's not just Pablo Escobar. You know, you get deeper into it.
Yes,
And
that's
there.
yeah. I mean, it's he's kind of a Pablo's kind of a he's kind of a side note in this movie. It's not he's not even the problem. The problem is Barry figuring out how to make all of this work,
Yeah.
which is kind of. But I do like certain things. Like he starts with the TWA, then he leaves. I mean, it's not like this is a real person. So he leaves the TWA very early. He starts working for the CIA. Dom Hall approaches him, his character Schaefer approaches him and says he kind of implies that he's working with the CIA when Tom Cruise like, "You're working for the CIA," and he's like he won't confirm it, but he doesn't deny it. But he kind of like, "Yes, I am, but you can't say it like that." Then he does what he's asks. He's flying things for the CIA, guns. And he meets, he's in South America in a very bad situation. They ask him politely to fly drugs back. I mean, he can say no, but then they're just going to shoot him in the head. So,
Yeah, exactly.
can he really say no? No. So he makes it work. He loads his plane with the drugs, and then he throws them out the bottom, a removable a hatch in the beginning, in the bottom of the plane. So he's able to hit at least a target with within like half mile range, just dropping all the drugs. So he's running things for the CIA. Then he's running for Pablo drugs. And neither one of these failure's not really an option here.
You can't, yeah, exactly. You
Or
can't
like
really.
unwilling to participate, it's just gonna get him dead. By either side, he's just in
Yeah.
a really bad spot. Now I'll admit he arguably he does make it worse for himself. Because he's kind of that, like, now he's lying to everybody, of course. Just he's lying to his own wife. He's lying to himself through most of the movie of, how he's not in as much danger as he's really in. It's just lying to everyone. He has to. I love how he moves his family, like, an hour before the cops come for a raid. He moves his
Yes.
family.
He's like we need to go now.
And only in the magic of movies is, like, in a normal situation, a real wife would be like, "You know what? Unless you tell me why we're moving, I'm not moving." But
Yeah.
because the movie needs to have suspense, he doesn't tell her, and then like, and then as they're driving down the road, you see the cops going the other way, going to raid them because it just crazy and how that works out.
And one thing about that, you said he had an hour. There's no way he could have packed this car up that good in
an
hour. Well,
if you're only grabbing essentials, yeah, they obviously left a lot of crap behind, but if you're only grabbing essentials, sure, why not?
True. You know what? I will say Tom Cruise did, he played the suspense off well. Like the, you know, I'm not worrying, but I kind of am worrying. Yeah, that I might die. I can die today, but let's try not to have that happen.
Well, you never really. One thing I was looking for is, he was like I was never scared he was gonna die. If that makes any sense. Like I never thought he was in, as far as like with Pablo or the CIA, like in danger of being killed. Like I never got that vibe ever that he was in danger of being killed. So as far as like that. Maybe that was a failure or perhaps it was, like I said, it could have been just that lighter tone that made me not think like that. But I mean, it's one of those movies that I feel like this movie's hard to not just enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I can't think of a reason that the movie's not likable. I mean, Tom Cruise is a very likable star. Barry's a very likable character, although he's doing kind of, you know. Unsavory things.
Yeah.
Running all the drugs and all the guns, and it just. Schaefer's off. He's a heavy enabler. He's putting Barry in this unwinnable situation, and it's like, oh.
Yeah, and incredibly unwinnable.
How do you. Geez, situations. I love the part about the caddies of how he's sitting there with, like, at one point. His airport is raided by the DEA. The DEA raids the
DEA, FBI.
Oh, the ATF, FBI, DEA, and state police all at the same time, and they're all like they're all arguing over who has jurisdiction, who gets to take him in, and then the next shot is him just sitting there with like 15 dudes surrounding him.
They played that off so perfectly because. One would come in, but the DEA busts him, and then right after them, the ATF comes in, and then they just keep coming in. It's so comedic how they do it because they're like, "Oh, put down the guns," and yet they're yelling at other officers of some type of government association.
Yeah, that's really awesome. That's a really really good scene. I thought when he's trying to get them to take the caddy bribe. And he's like, "You're gonna regret it. I'm gonna walk out of here." And they're all laughing, like, "Are you kidding me? You're done." And then the woman comes out who's just gotten off the phone with Senator Clinton, by the way, from Arkansas. He gets to go free. And he's like, "You guys should have taken the bribe." And then she's like, "We're gonna meet again." He just points at her and smiles, "Ma'am," you know, like one of those, like, "Nope, no, we're not." Love it, love it, love it, love the character, love the character. Later. I do the role of Barry. I thought if Barry was anything like Tom Cruise's portrayal of Barry in the movie, I like the historical character of Barry a whole lot more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like sometimes it's like writers have to take liberties to make things different, to make them enjoyable or make them, you know, more dramatic or less dramatic in whatever way the tone of the movie is going. But I hope the real life Barry was indeed like that. Was, in fact, what do they call him? The gringo who delivers.
Yeah, the gringo who delivers, and that's a great freaking nickname.
He's called that a number of times, which is obviously really really fun. The gringo that delivers, because he does deliver. I mean, he does a great job of it.
I will say though, you know, as a lot of people will probably say, you know, yeah, he ran drugs, guns, you know, a lot of things that you're like, oh, well, you know, there's a test of morale going on here. Well, certainly not putting up the big numbers in your case, but he also took photos, you know, for the government. As in, like, he'd fly over.
Oh yes, that was
communist.
Yeah, that's he. I'm sorry, I stated he was running guns to South America first, and then got into drugs. It was he was taking reconnaissance photos. I'm sorry, I misstated that. It was reconnaissance photos first, and then that's how he got roped. He stopped for gas, and the pump was locked, and he got thrown into the drug world because of that. So,
can you imagine that?
I would be terrified beyond belief.
Yeah.
I was thinking to myself, now I have vacationed. I did go to Mexico City for a vacation. I went down there for a wedding in 2015, and I was terrified the entire time I was there. Only because I hadn't done the research until I got there. But then, like, I did quick research, like, when I was in the airport, when my buddy and I were waiting to be picked up, of where we were visiting wasn't exactly tourist-friendly. So, like, Ooh. Of course, the entire weekend I was, like, paranoid. I was going to just get abducted and killed, but... I'm alive, as I'm talking to you now. So
yes,
but I mean, yeah, there. South America is probably definitely not a good place to be if you're being asked to get in a car and you have no idea why.
Yeah,
that's probably one of the worst situations you can probably find yourself in the world.
That was never mind.
And I love the tapes. There are tapes with timestamps on them which make more sense after you learn where in the story the tapes fit. Mm-hmm. They make a whole lot more sense. Of he's like, we're being told, you're being told this story through Barry Seal, which I think is very interesting. That's a very fun way to do it. I'm actually surprised it did that. But you're being told, he's almost narrating his own story, which is kind of cool because you get an account you wouldn't normally get.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see these videotapes of he's recording of what happened, and then you learn later that they are placed in a different part of the timeline, and that's when, like, oh my god, like, that's like a light bulb moment. That's really kind of cool. But
yeah,
the thing about, like, Doug Liman, I think, was one of the perfect directors for this movie. On a short list of maybe a few others, but I think Doug Liman did a very good job.
Oh yeah, he did a fantastic job. I can't really, in my notes, I didn't really have anything bad to say about this movie because I thought it was I thought it was pretty good. It had moments where it was funny. You know, there was some action in there. You know, a lot of crazy stuff going on. One thing I thought was incredible was When the Schaefer, when he gets, you know, when he gives Barry Seal his the airport, and he calls it the Independent Aviation Consultant.
Yeah, IAC. Yeah.
It's like, come on, man. Could you make it more obvious?
And it's almost like one of the tapes, and I guess this part is historical record. The tapes, I'm sure, do exist, and I'm sure that's what they were doing them off of. And one of the things I thought was interesting is one of the tapes early on in the first few minutes of the movie, when he decides to leave TWA and take up Schaefer's offer of working for the CIA, I mean, not confirmed, but working for, obviously, who is the CIA, he says in one of these tapes, right after he walks off the plane on the tarmac, because he doesn't want to deal with TWA anymore, he'd rather work for an independent company, which is the CIA, he says, in hindsight, I probably should have asked more questions, which is perfect for the entire movie because he never asks why. Barry never, he just says, okay. Like, he never asks why he's doing what he's doing. I guess he doesn't care, but that was really cool how they showed that clip of, in one of the tapes he makes for himself, is I should have asked more questions because he never asks why. He just does. As he says, he always leaps before he looks, which is exactly what the Barry character does. He never asks why. I mean, his super hot wife is happy that he's providing a great living for his family, so.
Exactly. Hey, you know what? A happy wife is a happy home.
Happy wife, happy life, Nick. That's the phrase.
Oh, okay.
Happy life, happy wife. Which is probably true in America. I mean, I don't know about other countries, but in America, that's probably true. American Made is definitely the movie of the week. There's no question between that and Flatliners. Definitely American Made. And the movie for the Clark Hayes list of movies you should probably watch and or be able to reference, the movie I landed on is a movie I referenced when talking about the trailers, and that is Lord of War. 2005, Andrew Niccol directed it. Nick Cage, Jared Leto, Bridget Moynihan, Ethan Hawke, and Ian Holm star in this one. This is like, to me, like 2005 is like the cusp of when most things were big budget as opposed to a lot of smaller things making it in the theater rotation. It's kind of at the end of that line. But this was huge budget, and obviously huge cast. Like I just said, Nick Cage, Jared Leto, Bridget Moynihan, Ethan Hawke, Ian Holm, all huge, all have enormous credits to their name. But Yuri Orlov, Nicolas Cage, tries to live a life honest way, making an honest buck, but finds it's easier to become a dealer of sorts. As Yuri states in the film, the problem with making an honest buck is they're so hard to make. When he tries to make his first sale of a gun, he quickly moves up the ladder, getting more and more product. He recruits his brother Vitaly, played by Jared Leto, to help him. He is soon hounded by an Interpol agent and must come to terms with his own morality while trying to stay ahead of an enormous growing list of enemies trying to stop him. You know, including the Interpol, the American government, and rival gun dealers and people in third world countries he is visiting. It's just, it gets really messy for him quick, which is very much like our friend Barry. So he tried to stay ahead of all that. Is successful most of the time. Always reasons with Clark Hayes. There's always relevance. It was relevant in the 80s, and it's still relevant today. It's fun to always combine the battle of morality with the very bleak ending and beginning of the movie. Because, I mean, the way it starts, it shows you the cycle of a bullet being made, then, like, being shipped off, then being put into a gun, and then fired, going right through a child soldier's head in Africa. And that's, like, the cycle of the bullet. And it's kind of a brilliant opening scene, because you follow it through, like, the assembly line, then it goes into the clip, and then it's fired, and you see it travel, like, this long distance, then right into the child soldier's head, which is kind of, like, lets you know real quick what kind of movie you're getting into.
That's powerful. That's some powerful stuff.
It is big budget Hollywood, as I love. Huge budget with huge stars. That's kind of like for me. But is while Lord of War might not be the best movie on the list, it certainly is entertaining and has incredible rewatch value. There's because we love and we hate Yuri, mostly hate him because he's kind of a slime ball in what he's doing. He's putting his family prioritized as second. Even though he has his trophy wife, he has his child, he has a place in Manhattan overlooking Central Park, which anyone in their right mind would trade, would give anything for. He has everything, and he keeps jeopardizing it for this life he can't seem to stay away from. And one of my favorite scenes is the movie, which I have named, If I Took Them, I Was Lost. If I Left Them, I Was Lost. This is a major story point, but he says that just after some huge story point happens. I don't want to ruin it, but and then that's when his battle with morality really, really comes full tilt. Is he has to make some very difficult decisions, and that's what I love the most about heroes is, you know, decisions is what makes a hero. Not that, you know, he's kind of a slime ball, but he's still the antagonist, the protagonist. So I do love
still
Lord of War,
but hero. Hero slime ball.
Hero slime ball. But if you like if you like American Made, you will absolutely love Lord of War, and vice versa. They are very similar in that respect. So definitely, I mean, Barry is running guns for the CIA, and then he gets roped into doing other things. And Yuri is running guns for the CIA, and when he gets caught, he's brought out of it. But it's very similar characters. So, I mean, if you love one, you'll love the other. There's no reason why you wouldn't. But that's a pretty solid movie to have in your collection and watch maybe once a year. That was a Clark Hayes submission. That was thank you, everyone, for listening. My name is, I'm on Twitter at GraysonMaxwell1. Nick?
I'm Nick Morris at NMorris1776 on Twitter.
Because he loves America.
You
can tweet the show at Love Cinema Pod. You can check out the Facebook group. You can find us on Apple iTunes Store. You can download, you can subscribe. Every episode will be sent straight to your device. Or if you're if you're an Android user, go to Google Play. And there's many different ways to listen. But Again, thank you very much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed American Made and or Flatliners.
Have a good evening.